Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome
to our Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I am excited each week to bring you cutting-edge information about how you can take charge of your own health, and you can take back your health, and how you can live vibrantly healthy your whole life through by knowing how to care for yourself. The lifestyle, the diet, the exercise, all the different things that matter and that make a difference that unfortunately are not the things that we're taught as we're growing, as we're aging, as we go to the doctor. Our parents never taught us this stuff. This is stuff that we've had to learn on our own. And I had to learn it on my own big time when I was struggling with health issues. And I'm sure you felt in the same place. We are fortunately in a world right now where there are so many resources available to us. There's so many ways that we can actually learn how to take care of our bodies, but it can be confusing. It can be actually quite confusing, and that's why I do what I do. It took me years to help myself to get my own health back because I was going to conventional doctors, and when I did that, I got answers that didn't really sound good to me, like take medication for the rest of your life, or we don't know what's wrong with you, just live with it. So that's why I do what I do, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today to talk to you about the marriage of two of my very favorite topics, and that is the thyroid and the gut, and how they come together, and how you need to balance both of them in order to get true health. And how so many people who are struggling with thyroid problems, who are going to the doctors and being told they have a thyroid problem and given medication, but not actually told about all the diet and lifestyle things that happen and that are important for throwing their thyroid off and for regaining their health. So Hippocrates, you know, back at 2,500 years ago, said all disease begins in the gut. And we're just, as a modern-day society, starting to understand that. Those of us who've been in functional medicine for many years, we've been talking about that for a long time. But finally, conventional medicine is starting to catch up, and we're starting to see them studying what they call the microbiome, and that's the colony of organisms that live in your gut. And I know that sounds creepy, but it's true. They're really good stuff when it's in balance. And when it gets out of balance, it can wreak havoc throughout your body. And the thyroid is one of those major areas that gets involved in that. So I'm here solo today, and Lynn is going to kind of interview me and ask me some of the questions that she hears a lot related to this topic. And we're just going to go for it, and we're going to leave time at the end for you to answer your most pressing questions about the thyroid-gut connection. So let me bring Lynn on, and she'll tell you how this show is going to go and how you can ask questions and all. So Lynn, hello.
Hello. It's a great day. It's a great day to talk
awesome.
About our gut and our thyroid.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled.
I am too. And one of the questions that I have heard repeatedly, we talk a lot about our gut. You know, you have a gut instinct. You know, the thyroid-gut connection, things like that. And so people say, well, what really is the gut? And what goes through the gut? Because we talk about our thyroid and how that affects it, but they're like at two different ends of the spectrum, or so they think.
Right, like where are they connected? Like where's the thyroid actually connected? Well, it is sitting in your neck and food goes through that area, but there's no physiologic connection there. But let me just talk a little bit about it, because your gut, and this is interesting and most people don't realize it, your gut is not actually inside your body. And you're saying, hey, what? It's in there. I can't touch it. I can't feel it. It's in there. What do you mean it's not in there? It's actually not. It's a tube. Think about it. You open your mouth. You put the food in. It goes through this tube, goes down into your stomach. It's still not part of your body. It's still in this tube. This tube runs from your mouth to your anus. It goes all the way through, right? It's not actually part of your body. And the gut is a god, this really important process, all the different parts of it, the esophagus, the stomach, small intestine, the large intestine, they all have their own little function with relationship to food. But their job is to take what you put in, filter out what we don't need, establish what's safe, and then allow it to get broken down into small enough particles to get passed through into the bloodstream so it can energize you and feed and nourish the rest of the organs in your body so your heart can beat, your lungs can function, your brain can function, your muscles and joints and everything else functions well. So the gut is this centrally located, right? It goes right down the middle, goes in one way and out the other, and what happens inside the gut is it allows things, some of the things that go to go inside, but the gut is not an internal organ. So it's really, when people hear that, I think they get really kind of fascinated, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I'm fascinated just listening. Because, well, maybe it's because I'm a nerd, but, you know, I'm visualizing this tube going through, and we eat food, and it goes through, it's processed, it's broken down, but then something happens so that it's utilized by our body, or not in certain cases.
Or not. And that's where the problem lies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they talk about leaky gut for a reason, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and I think I want to really talk about what that is, because when we talk, people hear the term leaky gut, and if they're not real educated about what it is, they're thinking, well, where does it leak? Am I going to, like, leak outside my belly button? And how does my gut leak? That could be pretty embarrassing if it leaks in public. Well, the good thing is it's not leaking to the outside. That's a real serious problem requiring a medical assistance right away. It's a medical emergency. But it leaks from the gut to the inside. So we said it's this tube that passes through, and it's supposed to filter, and it's supposed to do this great job. So there's all these things that happen inside the gut that will help us to take that food and turn it into nutrition and to turn it into actual nutrients the cells can use. So it needs to get broken down. So first of all, your teeth have to chew it. That's like the only place in your digestive tract that has teeth is your mouth. So we can't mechanically tear that food apart anyplace else but in our mouth. So if you think you can bolt down a whole, like, you know, two bites and the food goes down and expect that to get digested properly, you're wrong, because there's no teeth anywhere else. Now, the stomach can do a pretty good job of chemically breaking down that food because it secretes these really, really strong acids. But again, that acid works on the surface area. The more surface areas that's exposed by the mechanical breakdown, the better it can break down that food and start to digest some of the proteins that are in it, some of the other nutrients. And then you have to have enzymes that get secreted. And there's different axillary places that are kind of internal organs, and they feed into the gut, like the liver, which spews out bile so it can be digested, the fat can be digested, and then the pancreas that spews out proteases and amylases and lipases and cellulases and all kinds of aces. It likes aces. And that's A-S-E, not A-C-E, not like we're playing cards. We all like aces when we're playing cards. But the pancreas does this its thing, and it breaks down more chemically. So we're doing all this chemical breakdown. And so that once it's in tiny, teeny, tiny, itty-bitty particles, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, which are teeny, tiny particles of protein, fatty acids, which are the teeny, tiny particles of fats, and then sugar, the bad guy, sugar, glucose, which is the teeny, tiny breakdown of the carbohydrates. And then once it's there, then it goes down to the lower part of the small intestine, gets absorbed. This is, in a nutshell, what the digestion does. But then whatever is left is supposed to be acted upon. Now, there's some bacteria that live in the small intestine. There's some bacteria that live in the large intestine. And those bacteria, the good guys, will actually start to break down and absorb some of the nutrients and actually make some nutrients. Like vitamin K is made by bacteria. Vitamin B12 can be made by bacteria. Some of the other B vitamins can be made by bacteria. So these bacteria, when we have it in balance, will actually help us digest our food. When those bacteria get out of balance, they produce gases and all kinds of toxins, and they make it all bloaty and yucky and uncomfortable. and they interfere with the breakdown of the food, and then they produce these toxins that get absorbed into the bloodstream along with the good stuff. So if you don't have a good factory going on down there that takes the food and efficiently breaks it down and allows it to go into the bloodstream, and you got kind of a sewage dump down there, you're not going to do well. And so that's all how the digestion works. And the big push right now, you know, big people are like, oh, the microbiome. Well, yeah, we've known about that in functional medicine. We've been looking at that for many years. But finally, medicine and science is starting to take a look at it and break it down and see that there's thousands, at least 1,000 have been identified different organisms. And, you know, you've been taught, if you have been, that probiotics are awesome for your gut. And so we should go out and take probiotics. Probiotics, what are those? Pro-life, probiotic. Those are the good guys that your body needs. Well, when you buy a bottle of that stuff, some of them only have 2 or 3 different kinds of organisms in them, and some of them might have up to 10 or 15. But there's at least 1,000 that have been identified so far as being clinically useful in the body. So as you grew up and, you know, your good mom was trying to take care of you and you got some kind of illness and she took you to the doctor, if your doctor was antibiotic happy, which most of them were, at least when Lynn and I were kids, they would just give the mom a prescription, right? Here, go here, your kid will be fine. Here's a prescription for an antibiotic. And the unfortunate thing is they didn't differentiate and do a culture to see if we had bacterial problems. We just said, oh, you have a problem. Here's an antibiotic. Well, we later learned that antibiotics don't work against viruses and that most of the diseases that we had as kids, the upper respiratory, the, you know, gastrointestinal type stuff, were viral in nature. So what we were doing, mom was just doing what the doctor said. We can't fault mom. She was just giving us these antibiotics to make us better. But what they were doing was killing off the bacteria. And if we what we were fighting was a viral infection, which, like I said, 80% maybe more were viral infections, then we're killing off bacteria. But those antibiotics don't go around and say, oh, are you a good guy? Oh, good, I'll let you stay. You're a bad guy? Bang. You're a good guy? Good, you can stay. You're a bad guy? Bang. No, it just says, bang, you're all bad, you're all dead. And it kills them all off. And then the viruses get to grow out of control, and the funguses get to grow out of control, and any kind of parasites you might have picked up that would have been transient and gone in and out, but it's got this like, oh my God, look at all this place to live, because it doesn't have any competition, and it decides to take hold in your gut. And then you're walking around feeling like bloaty and gassy, and, you know, all kinds of smells and eruptions and sounds are coming out of your body, and you can't even buckle your pants by the end of the day. And you're going, what's going on? So there's the gut in a nutshell. Did I cover enough, or there's still some questions about that?
Yep. No. I think it's important, too, to recognize how the immune system is a part of that gut, and that, like you said, with the leaky gut, or if there's that problem, then your body will have this immune system response that's a part of your gut reaction.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And that leads us really well into the thyroid issue and how they're connected. So thank you. She's good at leading me in.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So like 60% is the gut-associated lymphatic tissue, GALT. It's in your gut. 80% is 60%? It's some large number. What's 70, the number?
Yeah. It's 70.
That's 60. 70. Okay, so 70%. So that means, I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because this is your this is your segue from the outside world to the inside world. So I would want most of my lymphatics and my immune system to be in my gut. I don't really need as much of it on my skin because the skin is pretty impermeable to some of those larger molecules, but although I want some on my skin too. But, you know, my gut is where I really want them. So there's a lot of that immune reaction. And so say you're eating foods and you are just bolting them down. You're not chewing them. And they get down there, and it's really hard for your body to break it down. And you've got a lot of undigested food. Those undigested foods actually can irritate and aggravate the lining. And say you're eating a lot of processed food, for example, sugars and hydrogenated fats and heated fats that contain free radicals. When you heat a fat over a certain temperature. For most of them, it's around 118 degrees. There are a few that have higher temperatures. But once they go over that temperature, the molecule changes. It changes shape, it changes structure, and it becomes what's called oxidized, right? And so these oxidized fats are damaging, and they're damaging to cell walls. They're like create this kind of unstable molecule that goes around and tries to stabilize itself, but at the risk of, you know, pulling electrons off of the others, and then they become unstable, and then they chase around. And you get this chain reaction of destruction that happens in the body. And our bodies are invented, created, however you want to call it, we're created to have this amazing ability to get rid of those oxidation products. And some of those are byproducts of metabolism or exercise or whatever. So they're really intended to be there. But some of them are byproducts of factories and you know, food processing and people being in a hurry and wanting to have their food shelf stable. And what?
Stress.
Right. There's all these things that produce these oxidized fats, these free radicals. And our body has this beautiful antioxidant system. I'm sure you've heard the term antioxidant by now. And you hear usually about vitamin A and vitamin C and vitamin E, ACE. That's your antioxidant system. Well, those are just the babies. Those are just the little players. The big players in that really are the heavy hitters when it comes to antioxidants are glutathione and superoxide dismutase and catalase. And those guys can really, really ramp it up. There's just so much we can produce because it takes some raw material. It takes some nutrients, which we may not be getting if our guts are a mess. So we just so much we can produce of these heavy hitter antioxidants, and then we're low, and then so this oxidation reaction goes on throughout the body. And think of it this way. I mean, oxidation is like rust. So if you take like some sort of metal piece of furniture or whatever and you leave it out in the rain, over time, it just gets rusty, and that's an oxidative process as well. So that's what's happening inside your body. So think about your body's rusting. So when you're eating a lot of processed foods and you're not taking in the nutrient-rich, antioxidant-rich foods that your body needs, you got a lot of rust going on. It's kind of an like scary thing to think about. Bugs in your gut and rust in your arteries, that's really scary.
Right.
Anyway, so these things damage. They damage tissue, and they damage the cell walls of the lining, what's called enterocytes that line the small intestine, and they become damaged. And the holes that only are supposed to allow these nice little safe molecules to pass through, they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they allow these other molecules to come through. They allow bacteria to go through, and the lymphatics in the gut get overwhelmed by so much, and they don't work as effectively. So we end up with this process of inflammation and leakiness in the gut. And a lot of things cause it. And I'm going to mention one thing in particular that causes it that's, you know, gotten a lot of popularity, and it's a lot of controversy, and people don't like it when I talk about it, but I will anyway, which is gluten, which is like, probably the average American, if you look at the standard American diet, probably 50 to 75% of the calories that people take in are from gluten. Gluten is a protein that's found in wheat. And you think about the typical, you know, good old breakfast, right? Wheaties, cereal. We have toast. We have bagels. We have croissants. I mean, that's how people start the day, with that and a little
muffins,
orange juice,
donuts.
Right? Maybe some coffee and muffins and donuts and all that stuff. So we have a very gluten-rich breakfast is the typical. Cream of wheat cereal. That's one of the healthier breakfasts, right? Healthier than a croissant, yes, but is it healthy? So we go from
with
milk, that's breakfast with milk on top of it, right? And then we go to the lunch, right? What do people typically have for lunch? What did you have
sandwich.
For lunch when you were a kid?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sandwich.
Because it's easy. Right? It's easy. What kind of sandwich do you want today, honey? Oh, I'll have peanut butter and jelly, or I'll have bologna, or I'll have ham. But
bologna.
It wasn't like, what else would you like? Yeah, bologna, I loved that stuff. Yeah. But what else would you like? They didn't say, well, would you like a lettuce wrap? Would you like a kale salad? Would you like some broccoli? No, it was, what kind of sandwich do you want? And usually there wasn't any broccoli on the sandwiches either. I didn't eat broccoli till I was 19, and I embarrassed myself by asking what it was when I was at a boyfriend's house. I had never seen it before. So that's another story for another day. I'd never seen broccoli, and now I'm a big fan of it. Anyway, so that's what we eat for lunch, is sandwiches and wraps. And if we're healthy, health-oriented, we eat whole wheat bread, or we eat a whole wheat tortilla, or we eat pizza, mm-hmm. right? Because it was easy, right? You go and you pick it up. It has yep. to be something that you pick up in portable. So that's what we eat for lunch. And then what's for dinner?
Yep.
Well, if you go out to dinner, you're sitting there eating the hot Italian bread that they serve, right, before the meal comes. And
yep.
mostly you've filled up before the meal comes because the Italian bread is so enticing.
Yeah.
Or French
yeah.
bread, or one of those other crusty breads. So there's the bread again. You know, pasta is a very common meal. It's not uncommon for somebody to have some bread as an appetizer, and then have their pasta with maybe a little tomato sauce and some kind of meatballs, right, for dinner. And then, of
Which
course, you have to have
dessert.
Probably
have breadcrumbs in the meatballs.
Oh, yeah,
when
they have breadcrumbs in there. That's
yeah.
right. Yeah.
Yep. And
then
also, you might have a salad. You have a salad with
croutons.
It, but the dressing on the salad, yeah, with croutons, and then the dressing probably has some type of flour or something like that in there. At least
thinking
what I've
right.
noticed. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I'm up to more than 75% of the diet. It's like
yeah,
almost 100%
I think
of
so.
The diet for a lot of people is gluten. Then, of course, dessert
yeah.
is never just a nice bowl of fruit or berries with, you know, cashew cream on them. The dessert is usually some kind of pie or cookie or cake or, you know, muffin or whatever.
Yep.
And then, of course, mid-afternoon snacks, what do you get for that? Pretzels, you know.
Oh, true.
It's just yeah. horrible. And so over time, we've all developed this sensitivity to this thing. And maybe if we had whole grain products that contain gluten in moderate amounts that was proportional to what we ate everything else, we wouldn't have developed as a society such a horrible sensitivity to this stuff. But on top of it, the demands are such that we want the lightest, fluffiest, best bread, so they hybridize them so they make more gluten. So
right. When I used to make my own breads, I actually bought gluten flour. I mean, it's buy gluten to put in with it to make
put
it
in
rise
the bread.
Better. Right.
Make it rise better. Right. So we've
yep.
all gotten an overwhelming amount of gluten in our lives. And why is that so bad? Well, gluten in and of itself is considered to be very hard to digest. And again, if it was just a small amount that we ate as we grew up and we had it with a whole plant-based, you know, antioxidant-rich diet, we may not get in trouble. But it's just become such the everything in our diet that people say, well, if I got to go gluten-free, what can
What's
I eat? There's
eat.
Nothing left, right? What's left to eat? So that's, and
well,
gluten
and
being
the other
very inflammatory.
The other aspect to that is the genetic modification and
right.
glyphosate.
Oh, yeah. And glyphosate.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that changes
So any of
it.
The meat you're going to get now, except the organically grown, of course, doesn't have that. But who knows? It could have it because they're the cross-contamination. So we think that with all this GMO stuff that we're safe when we eat products that are typically, you know, the commercial versions are genetically modified. We think we're safe when we go organically grown because they can't do that. However, they can't stop nature from flying the seeds across the fence from one farmer to the next. And even though there's a 3-mile radius and all that kind of stuff. What's that?
They sue the farmers if they find that their
oh, yeah.
product is down.
There have been that.
Even though they had nothing to do with it. But that's
so even
show.
If you're eating organic wheat, yeah, it's a whole other show. Even if you're eating organically grown wheat, right, you're still running the risk of that having been contaminated from another crop of wheat that was genetically modified. So you add all this stuff up. Gluten has been, you know, scientists say this over and over again, that people that study immunology say, you know what, we don't think anybody really has the mechanism to efficiently digest wheat gluten. But some people do it better than others, but definitely don't. Plus, there's this genetic modifications that have been passed down, and a lot of people have the genetics that say that they have celiac disease or something like celiac disease or a tendency towards it, which means they don't digest it. So what does this have to do with the thyroid? Well, when we have pores and holes and leakiness in our gut and we're eating things like gluten and dairy and others of the top allergens. There's six foods that are considered to be the most common allergens, and a lot of people have allergic reactions to. Gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts. Now, in addition to those being high in the allergy list, they're also high on the people eat them a lot list, whatever that list is called. People eat those foods a lot. Because if I say to somebody, let's do an elimination diet and get rid of gluten, corn, dairy, soy, eggs, and peanuts, they go, and drink water? What am I supposed to eat? Right? There's nothing left. So the gluten creates this inflammatory response in the gut. These inflammatory chemicals get into the bloodstream. Here's one of the deals. The gluten protein can cross-react with tissues in the body. And one of the tissues that it cross-reacts to very commonly is the thyroid. And when I say cross-react, you're like, what does all that mean? You know, it's interesting to note that scientifically, when you look at the way that an antibody reaction happens, like your body's fighting things off with an antibody. Like it sees strep in your bloodstream, it's like, get rid of it, boom, and it creates antibodies to gobble it up. Well, the way it recognizes it, after it sees it the first time, it memorizes that blueprint of what strep looks like. But really, it's looking at the two ends and the three amino acids at each end. And that's what it's attacking. So if something else comes into the body that has those three out of, like, you know, dozens and hundreds of amino acids in a protein, and it has three of those, same, it's going to attack that. So if the thyroid and the part of the thyroid that the antibody's got, if the part of the gluten that your body decided it was going to attack is similar to the tissue on the thyroid, it's going to attack the thyroid. If it's similar tissue in the joint, it's going to attack the joint. So you're going to have rheumatoid arthritis and other things like that. So this is one of the mechanisms that creates a problem for the thyroid. Let me just go back before we go into more of how the gut affects the thyroid. And just let's talk about the thyroid. Is that okay if I talk about the thyroid for a little while?
Oh, please do, because I was going to ask, you know, we know the thyroid produces hormones, and what role does that play in here?
Mm-hmm. So your thyroid controls the metabolic rate of everything in your body. It's basically the furnace, right? You turn it up, you turn it down. So if you need to have a higher metabolic rate because there's a lot of activity that you're doing, turns it up, tells all the cells. If there's a fever, it turns up the metabolic rate. If there's an infection, it'll turn up the metabolic rate in that area and throughout the body. So you get a fever to try to fight off that infection. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong with this great gland, and it's important to have good function. And one of the things that can go wrong, which is the least common of all the ones, but it's the most commonly treated, it's what we call primary hypothyroidism. It's like for some strange reason, the thyroid just decides it doesn't know how to work anymore and it stops working. But the treatment for that is if the thyroid stops making a hormone, the main hormone it makes is T4, you would think, okay, the treatment for that is to give the body some more T4 and that's going to take care of it. But is that solving the problem? Like, why did the thyroid stop working? It's very rare that it just stops working because of, I don't know, some faulty mechanics or some faulty genetics. There's usually something that triggers the thyroid to stop working. So that's a rare form, but that's the one that all doctors know how to treat. It's like, oh, the thyroid, you have a low numbers, here's your thyroid hormone. Take it for the rest of your life. Another one that doctors see and know how to treat, it's rare, but is an autoimmune disease, meaning your body's attacking itself, that causes a hyperthyroidism. Hyperthyroidism is much, much less common than hypo. Hyper meaning it's overactive. And those are those, like, really super skinny people that are always on, you know, they're like, you just get tired watching them. They're wiry, they're agitated, they may have heart palpitations, they just go, 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 they sweat. Those are the hypers. And usually hyper is caused by an autoimmune condition. They call it Graves. Doctors know how to treat that. I don't agree with the way they treat it. They basically irradiate the thyroid, make it stop working, and then turn that hyperthyroid person into a hypothyroid person and give them thyroid medication for the rest of their life. To me, that sounds a little bit barbaric when we know that there are other ways to deal with it. And the third thing that doctors know how to deal with is cancer, thyroid cancer. And thyroid cancer is popping up more and more. It's one of the more, the cancers with the better prognosis, and they typically will cut out all or part of the thyroid and then put you on thyroid medication. So that's the three things that most doctors have been trained. They're very versed in doing. But that's three of probably 22, 23, 25, something like that, kinds of ways the thyroid can fail. And I'm not going to go into all the details of that because I'll bore you, but I'm going to give you some of the highlights and the biggies that you need to watch out for and the ones that tie into the gut. So the one that's the most common cause of hypothyroidism that is rarely tested for in conventional medicine is autoimmune, and that they call it Hashimoto's, and it was named after a Dr. Hashimoto who discovered it. And there's basically where the body starts attacking itself. The immune system starts making antibodies that attack the thyroid cells or the part of the thyroid, some of the enzyme systems in the body, in the thyroid, that make the hormone. And that's a problem, right, if you have these antibodies. So typical person with Hashimoto's goes undiagnosed for a long time until they probably go to a functional medicine doctor and then they get diagnosed. But they basically go to the doctor with all these symptoms of low thyroid, like, oh, they're constipated and they're gaining weight even though they're not eating more and their hair is falling out and their skin is getting dry and they're depressed. And the doctor says, sounds like a thyroid problem. Let's check. Now, if they check that person and that person's TSH shows up in what the doctors consider the normal range, which is somewhere between, you know, 0.5 and 4.5 or 5.5, depending on the lab, the doctor says, I thought it was a thyroid problem, but I don't think it's a thyroid problem because your TSH is normal. Well, maybe we just need to give you something for the constipation, and we'll give you Prozac for the depression. And, oh, that hair, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's something you can do with the hair, or you can just live with that. That's not a big deal. And, you know, why don't you put some of this lotion on your skin? So they get treated for all the individual symptoms, when really it matched to thyroid, but they haven't been trained enough to go further. So one of the first things I like to do is do the antibodies. Because a lot of times the antibodies will be elevated even though the numbers look normal. A lot of times the antibodies will be elevated, the person looks normal, and they don't have a lot of symptoms. And that's the time to catch this. Because when do you want to find out that you've got bullets being shot at your thyroid from inside your body? After your thyroid's destroyed by the bullets, or at the very first sign of these bullets being shot?
The very first sign.
Absolutely. So why isn't it routine for all people that are in that, you know, age group, the kind of group that's most likely to get it, or everybody that shows up with fatigue? Why isn't everybody that shows up with fatigue have their thyroid antibodies checked? I don't know the answer to that. I'm asked. It's a hypothetical
question. I don't know myself.
We don't know.
Because
that's
don't
one
see.
Of the first things I do, right? If somebody comes in to see me and they have any symptoms at all, I'm doing a complete blood panel, and I'm doing the thyroid antibodies. Because I've caught people with very low levels of the antibodies that I know that because I caught them then and we got them to reverse the condition then, that them from having a serious thyroid issue down the road. So that's the first thing that really irritates me. And the thing is, if they do test it, some doctors do test it, but they still don't do anything different. Most doctors don't test it because they don't know what to do. And that's different than just giving them Synthroid. So if they do come back and their TSH is abnormal, they give them this medication. They don't bother to check with the hormones, the antibodies.
And there's two different types of antibody tests, right?
Yes. There's thyroid peroxidase and antithyroglobulin. And statistically, it looks like about 80% of people with Hashimoto's have elevated thyroid peroxidase. So if somebody's on a budget and I'm kind of suspicious, but they don't want to spring for both tests, I'll have them do just the one, the thyroid peroxidase. And if that comes out normal, guess what I do?
Have them do the thyroglobulin antibodies.
Exactly. If that comes out positive, what do I do?
And you've already done the TPO?
I've done the TPO and it comes out positive.
and you've done, and now this is a test.
This is a test. It's a trick question. So basically, if the thyroglobulin comes back negative, I'm not assuming they don't have an antibody problem. I'm going to go test the
right.
other. If the TPO comes back positive, then I'm saying they have an autoimmune. If just one of them is positive,
yeah.
I just say, well, I'll save you the money. It'd be nice to know if the other one's positive too, so we can monitor it. But if you want to save the money, let's just go. You have an autoimmune. Let's work on your immune system. I don't say let's give you thyroid hormone, because sometimes they do need the thyroid hormone
no.
if there's a lot of destruction. But it's like they need to have their immune system balanced. And so then we have to look for root cause. Why is their immune system attacking their thyroid gland? And there's a number of reasons. And the key critical one, you've got to look at their gut. And if their gut is leaky, if they've got a lot of allergy, if they've got a lot of toxins being produced in the gut, their microbiome is off in their gut, then they're at much higher risk of Hashimoto's. So we clean up their gut. Right? We get their blood sugar balanced. We look at heavy metals. There's a whole series of things we do. But since today's talk is about the gut, I'll just talk about that. In the program that we have coming up, the Thyroid Revive and Thrive program, which I know a number of you are signed up for, we're going to take you through all of this. And you're going to get to run your own tests. I'm going to teach you exactly what tests to run. I'm going to help you interpret those tests and put together a plan based on the results of your tests. And we'll learn a whole lot more about how to deal with Hashimoto. So we've got the antibodies. So that's one that's very uncommon. Second one that's very uncommonly looked at is what's called a conversion, under conversion issue. So your thyroid produces T4. It's amino acid tyrosine and 4 iodines. And I hope it's okay with you that I like to explain all the details, because I know some people say, just tell me what to do. But most of you are here because you don't want to just be told what to do. You want to understand how your body works. And once I know that you know what to do, then I'll, or how it works, then I can explain to you what to do, and you're going to get it, and you're going to really do it because you understand it and you know the importance of it. So T4 has to get converted to T3, right? So we know that, right? T4 gets converted.
Yep.
T3 is what all the cells see. Oh, yeah. Oh, T3. Thank you. Tell me. I'm going to turn up the furnace. Oh, I've got to turn down the furnace. So if we don't convert the T4 to T3, then the T3 is low, then we're going to have all the symptoms of the thyroid problem, but we might have perfectly normal TSH is what the doctor's looking for, and perfectly normal T4. And if they're not looking at the T3 also, they don't detect that you have a problem. They're like, okay, here's some Prozac, here's some, you know, laxatives, blah, 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 to try to get you to treat the symptoms. So there's a lot going on here. So those are the main, and there's one other very commonly overlooked symptom, and it doesn't always show up in the conventional lab test. So we've already showed you that you can have Hashimoto's and not have an abnormal lab test unless they test the antibodies. The rest of the numbers could look fine. Doctor doesn't catch it. Number two, you can have a conversion issue, T4 getting converted to T3, but everything looks normal because all they're looking at is TSH and maybe T4. And then the third one is called thyroid receptor issues. And man, those aren't picked up at all because nothing shows up. T3 is normal. Reverse T3 might be high, but you've got all these other numbers that look normal. And there's receptors on every cell that are a little like they're waiting for the thyroid hormone. But if they get destroyed or damaged, then you're not going to be able to pick those signals up, so you're going to have all the symptoms even though your lab tests look normal. But here's the rub, and I promise you we're getting back to the gut. How do those receptors get destroyed? Those receptors get destroyed by stress, which produces specific inflammatory cytokines. And stress doesn't mean just like I'm worried because of, you know, my mother-in-law is sick and I'm worried because of my kid. Stress comes in a lot of shapes and sizes. And one of the stresses is digestive stress, food allergies, immune stress, things that are not going right. So if you've got this whole reaction we talked about earlier in the gut and it's producing a lot of antibodies and there's a lot of inflammation in the body, you better believe that those cells are not going to be able to pick up that thyroid hormone and use it. And that's the most frequently overlooked. And all of these things can be corrected nutritionally. as long as you work with a practitioner who knows how to test for them and knows what you tell you. Going back to the T4 to T3, well, the conversion doesn't happen much in the thyroid. A little bit does. Most of it happens in the liver and the gut. So if your gut's overloaded, and your liver's usually overloaded when your gut's overloaded, you're not converting the T4 to T3. So you've got to heal the gut and support the liver in order to get that conversion up. Plus, there's minerals that you need. So if your gut's not working and your stomach doesn't produce enough acid to break down the food adequately, which happens, by the way, in a large percentage of the population, then you're not going to break down the proteins that you need. You're not going to get enough of the raw material to the thyroid, but you're not going to get enough of the minerals. And things like iodine, selenium, and zinc and magnesium are super important, especially selenium for that conversion. So you see how like they're so intimately connected? Does this all make sense?
It does to me. I mean, it's like watching the gears on a cog. They're just all starting to really click together, you know, because, like you said, it's not like one separate body part. They're all connected. You know, the stress raises mm-hmm. cortisol, and that does a number on your hormone levels, and then that has a reaction with many parts of your digestion, like your liver, you know, your mucosal lining, things like that. They all are mm-hmm. playing this game all together, and that's
absolutely.
Why you don't just work on your digestion, because when you work on your digestion, you're working on your thyroid at the same time, and vice versa, and it's
yeah.
very important. It's like playing a baseball game. You know, you were talking about the receptors. You know, all I could think of, I had just been at a baseball game with my grandson, and somebody didn't have a ball, a glove. And some of the ones that had gloves, they were just falling apart, and they couldn't catch the balls. And so when you were talking about the receptors and receive, all I could think of is, they were like these kids who didn't have a glove, or their gloves were not very good, and they couldn't catch anything.
They couldn't catch it. I like that. That's a good analogy. That's a very good analogy. And if you can't catch your thyroid hormone, those cells can't work adequately. And, you know, what happens if your cells don't work adequately? Like, if it's a lung cell that doesn't work adequately, you're going to have trouble exchanging oxygen, which is going to affect your energy level. If it's a digestive cells, it's going to affect like the production of the enzymes, the probiotics, the creation of those, and it's also going to affect the motility. So it slows down the movement,
right.
So you can get constipated. If it affects the brain, it's going to slow down the brain, and you're going to feel slow and fatigued and depressed and brain foggy. So you can see, all in all, it just affects every little tissue, every part of the body. So the thyroid is so super important. And you can see that it's just not enough to just pick up, go to the doctor's office and say, you know, I have all these symptoms. I was reading online. It sounds like a thyroid problem. Can you help me? And the doctor runs a TSH and says, nope, it's not your thyroid. Your thyroid's perfectly normal. You know better now. You know better now.
Right.
And when you're in my Thyroid Reviving Thrive class, we're going to give you lists and descriptions and the ranges you should be looking for, and we're going to have you get your labs tested, and you're going to bring those tests to the calls, and I'm going to help you to understand and interpret it, and then we're going to use the tools that I have put together for you to help you design the right diet, the right supplement program, the right nutrients that you need, and the right diet and lifestyle, and you know, reference the healing of the leaky gut. So it's a really great program. So, by the way, it's at thyroidreviveandthrive.com for those of you who are on the line and aren't signed up yet. It's an awesome program. So I got passionate about doing this because over the years, as I've learned more and more about the thyroid and watched people go after their medication, when we address the gut, when we address their blood sugar, when we address their nutrient levels and their stress levels, and that affected their thyroid. So it's not a matter of just treating each individual piece as a individual piece, like Lynn said. It's a matter of what is the root cause. what's going on in there that's causing it. It's not enough to, a thyroid problem is not necessarily a problem with your thyroid. It's very rarely, in fact, a primary thyroid, what they call primary hypothyroidism. It's usually one of these other factors. And it's usually overlooked, and doctor will say, well, I don't know, just take some, you're borderline, so take the thyroid medication. Or you are out of range, but they're not looking at why, and they give you the thyroid medication, and you kind of may feel better for a little while, but it just doesn't really fix the problem. So that's my spiel, thyroid-gut connection. They're intimately connected. You cannot treat the gut without really affecting the thyroid. And if the thyroid is off for whatever reason, maybe it's not related to the gut or it's only partially related to the gut, it's maybe related to heavy metals or some other things or stress levels, then if you don't help the thyroid, the gut can't get better because you're going to continue to have the constipation. So it's this two-way street. You've got to address both. And really, the gut is the core of just about everything in your health. So that's all I really wanted to say about it. And there's so much more I could say, and we will share it in Thyroid Revive and Thrive. So if anybody has questions, if you're on the phone, you can just go ahead and do, what is it, one on the keypad?
Yep, hit one on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand for us. I do have one question. Is our blood test the only way to determine the balance of your hormones? So if somebody has their thyroid removed due to cancer and they want to make sure that their hormones are balanced, is a blood test the only way to do that?
Yeah, well, the blood test is a good way, but not necessarily. The other way is body symptoms, so body temperature. There's a whole way of testing the body temperature. And, you know, you do a three-point test. You can do it 3 times a day for 3 days. You average it out. You can also do the basal body temperature first thing in the morning. And Dr. Broda Barnes was the first one to write about that. He wrote a book, I think it's called Hypothyroidism, The Unsuspecting Illness. That was back in, the 50s when there wasn't a lot of hypothyroidism known or detected. Now it's like everybody's got it because of our environment and the gut situation and everything else. So, yeah, body temperature. And then we have a panel. We have a little history kind of thing with questions, and you can check it off, and we give you scores. And so there's a lot of ways to determine it. So blood test isn't just the only way. And sometimes what I do with people, I look at what's going on with them. I say, this is probably thyroid. We go through the issues. And then I'll just do things I know how to optimize the thyroid function. And then we'll go back and test the thyroid again or test it for the first time. So I like the testing, though. The testing does help me hone in faster. That's the main reason for it.
I have a question typed in the chat that says, will the 1-quart-a-day salt water and cayenne pepper plus lemon juice 10-day cleanse work to take the pain out of my bowels?
You mean the master cleanse? Well,
that also has maple syrup
in it. So if that's the master cleanse with the maple syrup, I wouldn't recommend that if you have bowel issues because it can feed the yeast. So anytime you have pain in your bowels, we have to understand why. Why do you have pain in your bowels? Is there an overgrowth? Are you constipated? Is there a fissure? Is there something serious, like a tumor? So you need to just be able to rule that out. So without knowing more about you, hard to say. I mean, I certainly know that cleanses can help just about everything. So if it's a really clean cleanse and it doesn't have the maple syrup in it, it's just what you said, that's almost like a complete fast. And that can be dramatic at helping because it will help bring down the inflammation, especially if you usually eat foods that create inflammation in the body or your gut is just not working well. It gives it a rest. So I think it certainly could be a helpful thing to do. But again, I would stay away from the ones with the maple syrup in it because that can feed the yeast.
Yeah, she just typed in, I've been going to the chiropractor. They use massage and cupping. It's really helping. They found inflammation all along my pelvic area and up the right-hand side of the intestines. So
you know, it could be that you do that, and some enemas and some colonics and things like that can be super helpful to keep you cleaned out and making sure that we all should be having 2 to 3 bowel movements a day. This whole myth of, you know, once every few days is fine. Even once a day is not enough unless you're only eating once a day, which in case you might only have one a day. But really, we should be having 2 to 3 bowel movements every day. Should be within a half an hour of getting up in the morning. That's the way the bowel works. And then it should be, again, about a half an hour after every major meal. So some people only have two major meals. They may have a little snack in between. Then you wouldn't expect to have a bowel movement after a snack. There's a process. It's a reflex that gets triggered when you go to the your food hits the stomach. There's something called the gastroileal reflex, and that it's a nerve impulse that triggers from the stomach, the gastric, to the ileum, which is that last part of the small intestine. It says, open up. More food's coming in. Let the stuff that's in there out. And that happens. And then within a half an hour of eating, you should be having a bowel movement. And that's the norm. And if you're not, then and you're having pain, if you're having bowel pain, pain down there, I would definitely make sure that you're cleaned out. And I, you know, certainly think that, you know, I would, of course, run it by your chiropractor and your massage therapist, whoever else is doing the work on you, to see if that's something, that might be something that they recommended. So, yeah, it could certainly help.
And by doing all of that, then you're helping all the rest of your body systems, too.
Absolutely. I am an advocate of fasting, but I think it has to be done intelligently. I might personally, you know, fasting was what completely turned my health around. But I've seen people who have a lot of, you know, they've got a lot of genetic polymorphisms that they don't actually clear toxins. They have to go really slow with detox. And some people can just go in there and just do a rapid detox and get that stuff out, be kind of miserable for 2 or 3 days and then soar. And other people, it's really not a good idea, especially if they have neurologic symptoms that get aggravated when they don't eat. So it's really a matter of really customizing it for you.
Okay, she typed in some more. She takes Liquid Kelp and J-Crow's 2% or InfoWars times 2 nascent iodine, almost a gas with psyllium organic. All I drink is 10 to 10.5 pH water, high pH water. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do with
iodine,
that information at this point,
yeah,
but
I don't either.
Iodine is certainly good for your thyroid.
Yeah,
iodine, you have to be careful that you make sure that you've tested for it, that you're not overdoing it. Too much iodine when you have Hashimoto's can actually trigger it. So I'm a big fan of going slowly with iodine until you test, and then I'll do massive doses if people need it. Iodine can be tremendous if there's fibroids. You paint it on vaginally. It can be phenomenal for fibrocystic breasts. You paint it on the breasts. I've heard that it's good for putting on various kinds of scars and stuff. I hadn't heard of that before. I was reading an article. I said, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. Like keloids and scars that just don't clear up, that it's good at breaking. That's good at breaking down the fibrocystic. But usually it's good where there's a lot of lymphatic tissue. So iodine can be good. Well, but again, I would just caution you to make sure that you don't overdo it.
Right, because she's doing kelp and the iodine.
Right,
she's
doing two different kinds of it.
Which is good, but, you know, again, with psyllium, you want to make sure you're staying hydrated.
Drinking enough. Yeah, and that whole 10.5 water, I mean, that's a Tangen thing, and I have mixed, I just refrain from talking about alkaline water. I just haven't figured out the benefit of that yet, so... But it might be helpful. I think that certain pHs are good for killing off stuff, and I think that's more the lower pHs if you've got some overgrowth. But, yeah.
Great.
Super. Any other questions? Anybody on the phone? Just do
no,
one on your
team. On right now.
Nobody has a phone? Is this clear? Was this helpful?
It was for me. I would love to hear from somebody if they brought clarity to the topic, or you know, why did they come here? What piqued their interest in this? Do they have issues with their thyroid? That okay, there we go. 646.
Right. Hi there. Just tell us your name and ask your question. 646 is your area code.
Yeah, I was just wondering about the cost of the program that you've been talking about.
Oh, yeah. Right now we're doing a special until tomorrow, and it's $247. It's a 6-week program. 6-week or 8-week? 6-week program. And it's got a lot of great stuff in it. You get a recipe book. You get coaching calls, private calls with me, like 6 calls with me, and you get the whole, you know, all the videos and everything that takes you through step by step. If you go to thyroidreviveandthrive.com, it'll tell you all about it.
Yep. Thank you.
You bet.
You're welcome.
You also get access to the Vital Community, which in and of itself has a lot of great resources. There's your Creating Healing Kitchen book, which
that's right.
Has, you know, lists all the different resources, all the equipment. That in itself is invaluable.
Oh my God, we put so much time and effort into keeping that up to date. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Exactly. As we,
yeah,
you know,
so check
and
it
as,
out.
Yeah, you know, as we reference different supplements and frequently, well, or maybe not frequently, but they do from time to time change their formulas, and so mm-hmm. we'll either take one out or put one in. But like you said, it takes some upkeep for that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm trying
yeah.
to think. We have recipe books in there that include sea vegetables. There's not very many recipe books out there that teach you how to make a pesto with a sea vegetable. There's a soup there that's really, really good. You know, just it's very hard to find. So that in itself is another really good reason to do that.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else that's in there besides, like you said, all the modules that give you different, gives you action steps, you know, about sleep,
right.
about getting outside and moving and the foods. And it teaches you
herbs.
You know, the herbs. You get visuals. You get the actual slides and everything that show the different body parts and how they work together and what could go wrong. And somebody in the chat says, Walgreens does a new super nano blood test for anything super cheap. They email results back in 4 hours.
Wow.
I've heard of that. Oh, that's
I have to check into that.
Yeah, I didn't know that Walgreens did it. There's that woman who developed that one.
Oh yeah,
blood test.
Where it only takes a tiny drop of blood.
Yeah.
Oh, it's available at Walgreens. Wow.
That's what she's saying.
Wow.
But
thyroid, that could be a nice, inexpensive way to do this. Wow.
Exactly. Exactly. So we'll have to keep our eyes open for that. Anyway, but yeah, the thyroid program is an excellent program. It takes some of the stress out of wondering what's going on in your body and what do you do for it, because
mm-hmm.
you have all those checklists, you know. Here's the assessments. Here's the things to check and see what you're doing, because you talk about the different patterns of thyroid. You know, it's okay, you've done this assessment. You found these things out. What kind of thyroid problem do you have? And here's step one, step two, step three for the things that you can do to
exactly.
help it.
And you get access to the website for at least a year and, you know, indefinitely
yep.
pretty much until we
yep.
take it down. Yep.
Yep. And then being on the call to you to ask questions as you're going through and you're taking your test and you're like, okay, I really don't understand. Tell me more. And
mm-hmm.
you are well known for not leaving a call until all questions are answered.
All the questions are answered. Well, the other thing that I do that I, you know, a lot of my colleagues think is crazy, but I help people read their labs on call. So
yeah,
can really
exactly.
help you understand what's going on. I love doing
yep.
that, and I've been doing it for long enough that I can do it quickly, and I can do a lot of people in one call. So, and that'll
yep.
give you some direction. Don't just go do these tests and say, well, now what? My doctor doesn't know how to read these. Now what? That will help
exactly.
you read them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's Thyroid
right.
Revive. It's on the blog. So if you're listening and you want to make sure that you've written it down right or you wrote it down and it's not going through, go to our blog at drritamarie.com. And click on the link there, and it'll get you there.
Thanks.
All right.
Right. It looks like that's it. No other questions. So I really hope this was helpful. If anybody's on the chat part, just go ahead and type in if this was helpful. And we'd love to hear from you. And, you know, and also if you have any other topics that you're really itching for us to do or specific guests you'd like us to invite to the show, we'd like to make this interactive. We'd like to make this really fun, and we're open to suggestions, always open to suggestions, you know, stuff that I can talk about and stuff that I can bring guests on. So thanks, yep. Lynn, for being such a great interviewer and coordinator and all that. And thanks, everyone, for being here. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo. We're at Vibrant Health Radio Show, Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show, because we really want solutions. If you're interested in the thyroid problem program, it's Thyroid Revive and Thrive. And if you've been dealing with a thyroid problem for ages or think you have a thyroid problem but nobody's been able to help you to assess that, this is the place to be. So thank you, and until next week, have a vibrant life. Bye-bye.
Bye.